current state on 90.5 WKAR. At the end of each month, we check in with Great Lakes commentator and journalist Gary Wilson for updates on environmental stories from around the basin. For today's Great Lakes Month in Review, we're focusing on ice cover, a timely topic, and Asian carp. A few weeks ago, I spoke with Gary after the Army Corps study on Asian carp in the Great Lakes was released, and Gary rejoins us now. Welcome back.
Hey, good morning, Mark. And as I was listening to your weather report a few minutes ago, I think you guys actually have it a little bit colder in Lansing than we do here in Chicago.
Well, there are so many weather anomalies, I can scarcely get over it. If memory serves, it hit 51 degrees yesterday in Nome, Alaska.
Wow.
So
okay. Think
about that. I also read this morning that it is for many parts of Michigan, it is the coldest January since 1977. So.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to talk about ice a little bit later, so it's as you said, it's appropriate.
That's right. Let's talk about ice, since we're already talking about ice.
There's
been a lot of activity since the Army Corps study, though. Let's open up with Asian carp here. Bring us up to date on what's happening since that Army Corps study was released.
Sure, Mark. You're right. We talked about this when the landmark Army Corps study was released a couple of weeks ago. That's just a quick summary. Advising the region that if they want physical separation of the Great Lakes from the Mississippi to keep Asian carp and other aquatic invasives out, it was going to cost about $18 billion and take 20 to 25 years. Since then, the Corps has been traveling the region and holding public comment sessions. Started in Chicago, went up to Milwaukee, over to Cleveland. It was in Michigan last week, and it's been interesting to see what's going on there. I attended the public comment session in Chicago. I've talked to people who were at the Cleveland session, and it's quite interesting. The sessions have been what I would say is moderately attended in Milwaukee. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel said it was lightly attended, and one source in Cleveland said that he really thought, and this is somebody who studies this thing over time, that the attendance in Cleveland was, quote, pathetic, given that Lake Erie is the one Great Lake that would be most impacted by if Asian carp got into the lake. So,
is there any pattern to the comments that are being brought up at these?
There is, and they're very predictable, Mark. The first hearings on Asian carp were probably in the winter of 2010. That was a few months after the environmental DNA was discovered past the electrical barriers in the Chicago waterway system. And I attended a number of those, and comments were very predictable. Environmentalists, some very passionate, concerned citizens who aren't necessarily affiliated with any organization, they were adamant and vociferous about something needing to be done. On the other side of the coin, business interests, usually led by the Chamber of Commerce, and shipping interests that would be impacted if there was physical separation or if locks were closed, they were also adamant that they didn't want to see that would happen. That would cause severe economic damage to themselves, and they say the region. 4 years later, as I watch these hearings unfold, it's kind of the same people talking about the same things. The dial hasn't moved one way or the other, so that's a little bit disappointing.
Well, it jumps back at me as well. You said that the critics of the Cleveland gathering maintained that it was turnout was pathetic or tragically low. Are invasive species relegated to the back burner in terms of people's awareness, even here in the Great Lakes?
I think that what some people in the region, and I'm one of them, say is that carp fatigue has set in. These Asian carp stories have been in the news fairly regularly, like I said, for 4 years. When people are constantly seeing an issue that and the dial doesn't seem to move one way or the other, I think there's a tendency to tune out. Granted, environmental groups are still very actively engaged. The business and shipping interests are actively engaged because they feel threatened by any movement towards physical separation. But I think the general public has had this tendency to go, okay, I've heard this story before.
Mm-hmm.
I and others call that carp fatigue.
Well, let's change topics here back to this low ice cover on the Great Lakes. Our fascination with ice has been revived this winter, as we mentioned, with the long cold spells around the region. What's going on?
Well, ice cover in the past few years has been diminishing with the warm winters. It dropped to as low as about 30% the last couple of years, according to the Great Lakes Environmental Research Lab. But this year, with the protracted cold weather, not just a short cold snap, it's up approaching 70%. And in Lake Erie, the smallest and shallowest of the lakes, it's almost 100%. So ice is back. You're right, we do have a fascination with it. People like to go out and look at the ice cover here in Chicago. I've been over in western Michigan and seen people going out to the lake and staring at the ice and lake and seeing ice for just as far as they could see. So we do have this fascination with it. But there's a scientific angle to this, too. Ice cover helps prevent evaporation. Evaporation affects lake levels, and low lake levels affect the economy, and especially in Michigan, which has such a big lake economy that affects tourism. So our fascination is scientific and economic.
I want to back up just a little bit. When you say ice cover is 70% this winter, is that 70% of what's considered normal?
No, 70% of the total surface of the Great Lakes.
Okay.
It's been down as low as 30% in the last few years.
Oh, that is dramatic. Well, yes. a new study by U of M and MSU further explores the correlation between ice cover and evaporation. How does this study explain the relationship?
Well, it's complex. It's a little bit revelatory. In simple terms, cold weather, cold winters leads to the ice cover, which prevents evaporation. But the study has found out that what happens in the fall is also important. We think of January, but October with the cold weather winters lead to colder water temperatures. But those colder water temperatures can also facilitate evaporation when the lake temperature is cold and the air temperature is higher, and especially in the fall, that can lead to evaporation. So it's a complex issue. I've read a couple of articles about this study, and it's a little bit counterintuitive. It's hard to get your arms around it.
Mm.
So both the institutions have said they need to do more and want to do more to help us understand this.
We're talking with current state contributor Gary Wilson, who's a Great Lakes commentator and environmental journalist. The Great Lakes Restoration Initiative got $300 million in the 2014 appropriations bill. Any information on how that money might be broken down?
Yes, Mark, that's good news for the region. Throughout this whole, all these budget battles, the region has generally been able to maintain that funding for the Great Lakes is somewhere between $280 and $300 million. The EPA has priorities to use this money. Cleaning up the toxic hotspots is probably the biggest use of it. And White Lake in western Michigan is expected to be taken off the list of toxic hotspots, as early as the spring, and that'll be a big accomplishment. But fighting algae is another priority, and then it goes on down to restoring wetlands and a number of less visible topics. But cleaning up these toxic hotspots that have been lingering for 30 years will get a big piece of the money. I did talk to the EPA's Cameron Davis. He's the top advisor on Great Lakes issues to the White House. And back to Asian carp, he was telling me about $16 million of that money will go to fighting Asian carp. So that's a healthy chunk of money.
This month, Senators Stabenow and Levin expressed concern over a pipeline running through the Straits of Mackinac, an Enbridge pipeline. How did the Federal Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Administration respond to the senators' complaints?
Well, they took them under advisement, and they did respond. They understood. They said they understood the concern, but they also said that they have been working with Enbridge. And to just remind our listeners, Enbridge is the company that owns the pipeline that was responsible for the Kalamazoo River spill a few years ago. But they told the senators that they have been working with Enbridge. Enbridge has made significant safety improvements, and this agency was involved before Enbridge was allowed to increase the volume of the of oil that moves through the pipeline that goes through the Straits of Mackinac. So no big revelations here. The government is saying, yes, we appreciate your concern. Yes, we agree that you should be concerned, and we're on top of it. So we'll have to see how that plays out. I don't see the environmental groups backing off on this.
And what do you expect to be covering in February, Gary? What are you keeping your eyes on?
Well, I'm going to watch the wrap-up of the Asian of the Army Corps' work. They've got a few more meetings, but I'm really waiting for somebody to step up in Washington to say we're going to take ownership and try to move it along. I've got a request into Senator Stabenow's office. She's really been on the point for this to see what her plans are, and I haven't received a response yet, but I'll be following up, and I hope to be able to share that with you in the future.
We look forward to that. Gary Wilson is a Great Lakes commentator and journalist. Gary, thank you for your time.
Always good to be with you, Mark. Thank you.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.